and it's 6 past the hour here on Air America Radio, and this is Morning Sedition. Good morning, geniuses, philosopher kings and queens, working class heroes, progressive utopians with no sense of humor. Mark Riley, how are you?
Good morning, Mark Maron. How you doing?
I'm pretty good, man. The new studios are still pretty good. Everything's hanging in there. Look, folks, I just wanted to say right at the top of the gate here, if you want to come join us in Washington, D.C., we'll be broadcasting live from the XM radio studios in D.C. this Friday, the day before the Green Fest and the big anti-war rally. We'll have Cindy Sheehan there live in person. You're going to need tickets for this one, so go to morningsedition.com and enter to win a free pair. The contest is open until Wednesday at 9 a.m. Eastern Time. So, Riley, I'll tell you, man, everything still has changed down there in New Orleans. Things have. We were talking yesterday about Mayor Ray Nagin's decision to go ahead and tell people they can move back in to New Orleans, and we knew yesterday that Vice Admiral Thad Allen, the guy who was in charge on the ground for the federal management of the post-hurricane situation there, had said it's not cool. We know that our buddy Hugh Kaufman from the EPA, for a 35-year the veteran of the EPA, said it's tremendously not cool, that it's literally a toxic soup down there. He said it wasn't cool. And even Bush jumped on board yesterday and says it wasn't cool. And we didn't know what was going on. I thought some sort of weird triangulation was going on. They were setting Ray Nagin up for a fall. But he has gotten on board as of yesterday and said, look, we got to postpone these plans to repopulate the city. And he's citing Hurricane Rita as his reason. But it seems like there's a bit of a mixture of politics and also Hurricane Rita involved in that.
I think Ray Nagin is probably using Rita to save a little face here.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking.
Yeah, because once Thad Allen, the vice admiral, jumped on board and said, look, you should stop this relocation plan, and then Bush, who I still maintain, told Nagin to start bringing people back in the first place, once he jumped ship and said, no, you can't do it, I think Nagin really at that point had no choice, and then it became, well, what's the rationale? Just a few hours ago, you're telling people to come in. How are you going to, do something that's not too embarrassing to tell people don't come back?
So you're saying then what we were talking about yesterday is that it was true. It was sort of a setup. Bush said, go ahead, let's do this. Let's try and get this underway as quickly as possible, knowing full well that if George Bush told Ray Nagin, the mayor of New Orleans, that he should do everything he can to start getting people back into that city, that he was going to be the guy that the responsibility laid upon. So now, Thad Allen and everybody else in the scientific world, everybody who has anything to do with this city at this point in time, says there's just no way you can safely put people back in. Now, George Bush, who is frightened, who couldn't even get a poll bounce off of his post-Katrina speech, thank God, who is frightened for his political career, and obviously he's frightened for the Republicans that surround him, rightfully so. I hope they all, they start to stink like he does, decides, look, we can't take any chances here, and then gets behind Thad Allen and says, look, Ray, we can't do this right now.
I'll tell you what, George Bush has really, really ample reason to be frightened right now. Because if Rita goes across the Florida Keys, it's going to do one of two things. It will either veer north, as Katrina did, and hit New Orleans and that part of the Gulf Coast, or it will continue west and hit Texas. And you know what happens if it hits Texas? It hits the oil fields.
Well, that's a big problem, considering they're working at half keel right now.
Yeah, and considering the price of gas right now.
Yeah.
If Rita hits those oil fields, expect another Labor Day-style price hike in the cost of gas.
Well, what people, I think a lot of people realize but may not realize, is that the oil industry in terms of refinement and refineries is already completely compromised. I mean, it's completely compromised in the Gulf by, like I said, like 50% in terms of its production possibilities there. And now if this hits again, it will just be disastrous. And I think this goes to prove, Riley, because as you know, yesterday, tourists were evacuated out of the Lower Keys, and about 40,000 people, local business owners, boarded up their stores. And now it seems, as you said, that that Rita could hit Louisiana. I think that still the one message we should extrapolate from all of this is that it's pretty clear that God, like most of the world, is against George Bush. And I don't think that we should take that lightly.
Well, I'll tell you what, I don't know how lightly he's taking it, but at this point, people in that region of the country have some very unappetizing choices, because if it hits New Orleans, they have already said that the repaired levees will not stand even a storm, never mind a hurricane.
Yeah, because they're just basically shored up by some mixture of cement and sandbags. I saw them dropping those giant sandbags on there. They definitely are not in any condition that is permanent. So certainly, you know, they could, and that was one of the reasons that Ray Nagin cited for not bringing people back into the city.
Yeah, and you're talking now about levees that will not withstand any strong storm surge.
So
and Rita, 75 miles an hour, you got storm surge.
Absolutely, and that could fill the place up like a bowl one more time. And that's what Thad Allen, Vice Admiral Thad Allen, the guy who's in charge of the federal response down there, he basically said, look, you know, if you bring people back into this city, and this storm hits again, even in a minor level, if something goes wrong and we get more water back into New Orleans, we have no way. We have no evacuation plan. They clearly didn't have a plan to begin with, and now they certainly don't have a plan. And another thing people have to remember is New Orleans isn't the only place that was hit, with this storm. You know, outside of New Orleans, the big problem is off the coast of Mississippi, where apparently wind did a lot more damage than water. There are seemingly never-ending mountains of debris that are spread about a 90,000 square mile chunk of America. And at this point, the state doesn't know whose responsibility is to clean it up, and that hasn't been sorted out yet. So I imagine that that just means that the administration is figuring out which cronies they have left to clean up the problem in Mississippi.
Well, the other thing is, of course, FEMA needs a detailed list of exactly what the debris is before they send anybody to clean it up. That's the bureaucratic nightmare that this federal agency seems to have created in the wake of Katrina. Everything has, you know, there was a situation where people were looking for temporary housing in Louisiana outside of New Orleans and some of the other parishes, and FEMA was telling telling people that it was the local folks' responsibility. The local folks are telling them it's FEMA's responsibility. So the people were caught in a catch-22 with no housing.
I'll tell you, it's what this has revealed about this administration and the way they do politics, both, you know, domestically and internationally, is really starting to take its toll. I mean, we've got hardline Republicans, you know, coming out against the Bush administration's policies, and we've heard from a couple of our old friends. John Kerry actually stepped up and said something with a little bit of momentum and fury, as he's wont to do occasionally, not necessarily timed properly, but but he is able to do it. The Wall Street Journal's op-ed page today came out very critical of Bush policy, and I think it's tremendous. I think it makes things very exciting. I think that we're gaining a little ground in as far as people waking up and seeing that they are being duped, that there is this sort of state of hypnosis that has fallen upon this country since 9/11 that is starting to lift a little bit because the truth is undeniable. We're going to get into some of that commentary. We'll get into what John Kerry said. As you know, Bill Clinton came out against the, you know, excessive borrowing from other countries that this administration is guilty of in all cases, both for the war and possibly for the relief effort. Clinton and others have commented on the repealing of the estate tax and the unwillingness to even raise taxes just a little bit to sort of, you know, buffer the situation. Also, we have Republicans like James Sensenbrenner, who is unwilling to make any sort of amendments, temporary amendments to the bankruptcy legislation to help people out. And I think people are really starting to smell what this administration is built on. It's built on cronyism. It's built on greed. It's built on, you know, helping the rich of this country, survive while they let the poor die. We're going to talk about what John Kerry said after this, and also what the Wall Street Journal's op-ed piece said after this. Everyone's taking shots at the president, and it's a good day. 15 past the hour. It's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition.
Morning Sedition.
This is to wake up.
Mark Maron and Mark Riley.
I've heard about those people.
On Air America Radio.
Thanks.
Nineteen past the hour. It's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition program. I'm Mark Maron. That's my buddy Mark Riley.
Good morning.
We're sitting here in the brand spanking new bunker-like studios here downtown in New York City. Hey, folks, if you want to go to Morning Sedition, you know, it's very fun to come see us do our show live. And if you're in the D.C. area and you're listening to us streaming or by some miracle of technology, or you're here in New York and you'd like to join us down there in Washington, we're going to broadcast live from the XM studios in D.C. this Friday. We're going to have Cindy Sheehan with us live in person. Who knows? knows who else is going to show up. There's some names floating around that I'm impressed with myself, and I guess we'll find out by Thursday, hopefully, who's going to be there. But you're going to need tickets for this one, so go to morningsedition.com and enter to win a free pair. I imagine some of you are going to be down there either for the Green Expo Fest or the big march, of course, on Saturday. I will be performing or speaking at that yesterday? The Idealism Expo.
There you go.
So here we go. Also tonight, let me just put this out for our New York customers. Funny man Bruce Cherry, who you know from our show, along with comedian Greg Giraldo and some others, are doing a benefit stand-up show at Stand Up New York tonight to celebrate the UN's International Day of Peace. Stand Up New York is on 78th Street, just off Broadway. For tickets, you can call 212-595-0850. So let's move into this. I just want to read something and tell me if you know where it's from. Quote, what we're seeing in the wake of Katrina is that despite all the winks and assurances to the contrary, as they pass the energy and transportation bills, Republicans in Congress don't know how to control spending and are at a loss as to why they even should. That's one way to govern. But if Republicans no longer believe in smaller government, why not put the Democrats back in charge? End quote. Where do you think that's from? How about the Wall Street Journal? And they go on. This is in another part of it that I just wanted to put that one out there first because it wasn't as clear. But this is definitely their agenda. But they are criticizing the neocon death cult. Quote, what President Bush, House Majority Leader Tom DeLay, and other Republicans haven't figured out yet is that deficit spending isn't a problem for them unless it endangers the broader conservative agenda. If it does, it will become the electoral issue. And what we're seeing is that Katrina is swamping every goal conservatives have, from limiting government to cutting taxes to reforming entitlement programs. This is interesting stuff, end quote, from the end quote was before I said interesting stuff. But this is from, you know, the Wall Street Journal. So now they are being critical of what these guys are, which they aren't really Republicans. They are a cabal of, you know, greedy freaks who are doing whatever is necessary to fill the pockets of their friends. And it means compromising the security of the world, security of the United States, and lives of the American people. And it's shameless, Riley.
Well, what you have here is the empire striking back. We've spent the last couple of years or so listening to the social conservatives arguing and promoting their agenda, whether it be restricting people's ability to control their own bodies in the case of the abortion question or any of these other
gay
marriage, the whole nine. Now we're starting to see the economic conservatives raise their head, and they have a very different agenda. Their agenda is smaller government, less spending, cutting entitlement programs, and now suddenly they're looking up and realizing that Bush has been one of the most prolific spenders in the history of the American Republic.
Yeah, spending and borrowing. That's what this guy does. And to show their evil, I'm not going to let the fiscal conservatives or whatever they want to call themselves, whatever faction of the right wing they say they're representing, I don't want to let them off the hook, because in the same paragraph I was just reading from this Wall Street Journal op-ed piece, quote, Katrina spending has already imperiled plans to repeal the death tax, and Congress is already $60 billion into a spending binge, handing out $2,000 debit cards was just the beginning. The conservative Congress has brought back the welfare state, unquote. So let's not deny the fact that the fiscal conservatives are equally as evil when it comes to how to treat the poor of this country.
No, there's no doubt about that. And they, you know, when it comes to cutting what they consider to be entitlement programs, Medicaid, Medicare, Social Security, whatever it is, they are ruthless. They don't care whether or not people eat. They don't care whether or not people feed their families. Their agenda is smaller government. Their agenda is less spending. And obviously, given the fact, you know, when you start talking about Congress, bringing back the welfare state by handing out debit cards to people who have been devastated by a hurricane, what kind of people are that?
Yeah, what kind of, you know, people with no conscience, psychopathic individuals, people who lack the ability to feel empathy or compassion or probably even sympathy. These are people that see that, you know, although they honor some sort of philosophy that they see as high-minded, are honoring nothing more than the adapt or die, you know, sort of, you know, biological imperative of animals, that they believe that they are entitled to whatever they have, and people that don't have what they have must be doing something wrong. So those people don't belong in the same culture that they belong in. And that's the way these guys feel. This is not what government or civilization was supposed to be based on. This is not what makes America great. What makes America great was our ability to take care of and spread democracy around and take care of people that may be less fortunate, that may be in a compromised situation. But these guys, they don't care. What they think, I really believe that they just say, if they don't die, if the poor don't die, well, then they'll be able to take whatever scraps we leave them, and that's the end of it. They don't have a voice. They don't deserve a voice. So I think what we're going to see in the aftermath of this storm is that that voice, I would hope, would become stronger if the people that are most affected can see through all this crap that is being spewed from all different outlets in this right-wing propaganda machine.
Well, the ultimate test, of course, will come in November 2006 when Americans go back to the polls for the off-year elections. And a recent poll published in last Monday's newsstand edition of Newsweek says that the Democrats have opened up a 12-point lead over Republicans in terms of who the respondents said they would vote for next year.
Well, I'll tell you, it's like you've always said, Riley, it's going to really come down to, you know, how it hits these people in their pocketbook eventually. All these moral sort of issues, all these wedge issues, all this, you know, sort of spinning of the Republican spin machine is going to break apart when it comes right down to, you know, gas is too expensive, you know, my cousin was in that storm down there, or, you know, or why can't I get insurance? Why can't I get a job? Eventually, reasonable people are going to wake up and realize that if there is a God and they are honoring this God, why are the people they believe in causing their lives to be so miserable?
Wait until it starts to get cold across the Northeast and the Midwest and people find, for example, that natural gas prices are going to start going up, and some people are estimating as high as 71%. What happens then? You're paying $3 a gallon for gas at the pump. You're paying 71% more for natural gas to heat your house. Oil prices are going to go up. Home heating oil prices are going to go up. What is going to happen to people?
Well, hopefully they'll get angry, Riley, and they'll get angry at the right people. And, you know, we can make some change in this country. And hopefully some Democrats will step up with some better plans. John Kerry did say a few things yesterday that I'd like to share with you in a couple minutes. We're also later in the show, you know, as we've all been paying attention to the hurricane for the last 3 weeks, you know, Iraq and the situation there has not stopped. It's gotten worse. And also we are all going to get into a little bit about, you know, there seems to be a hunger strike going on at Guantanamo Bay that is getting some attention because the military don't have a lockdown on the place anymore. Lawyers can get in, which means truth can get out. So it's 27 past the hour. We'll get into all that momentarily. Listening to Air America Radio's Morning Sedition program.
Morning Sedition with Mark Maron and Mark Riley on Air America Radio.
Thirty-four past the hour. It's Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Good morning.
You're listening to Air America Radio's Morning Sedition program from our brand new bunker downtown in New York City. Look, hey, in a few minutes we're going to be talking to our buddy Hugh Kaufman, who is a senior policy analyst over at the Environmental Protection Agency. He has been for 35 years. Man, was he pissed a couple weeks ago when we talked to him about what was going down in New Orleans. And I think he must be at least a little relieved today that Mayor Ray Nagin has postponed plans to phase people back into the city, given that the city is a toxic mess and given that the fact that Rita, the storm that is brewing off the coast now, could come into New Orleans and Texas, which would be awful because they don't really have a plan in place. They didn't have a plan in place before that was effective, and they certainly don't have one now that would be effective in getting people out of that city. So we'll talk to Hugh Kaufman about that and many other things revolving around the environmental problems that are sort of blossoming down there in Louisiana. Right now, you know, it's kind of hard to decipher what the headlines are saying. Thank God we got this dumb machine, the Wi-Fi 5000 headline, the iNews 5000 Wi-Fi headline translator. Here we go. Let's feed it some headlines. All right, folks. All right. All right. North Korea says it will abandon. From the New York Times, North Korea says it will abandon nuclear efforts. North Korea says it will abandon nuclear efforts. Translation. North Korean comedy, ironic, deadpan. Or wait, let me try another one. Let me feed that back to you. I think there's something else in there. North Korea says it will abandon nuclear efforts. Or Kim Jong-il to shift more resources towards perfecting platform shoes and pomade.
No.
All right. From the Associated Press, Bush turns attention to second court vacancy. Bush turns attention to second court vacancy. Translation, Democrats brace for Judge Dredd. That's a little better, isn't it? All right. From Boston Globe, Ohio doctor seeks to perform world's first face transplant. Ohio doctor seeks to perform world's first face transplant. Translation, Ohio doctor ready to slap on new face. Wow. That's good. Yeah. You know, I'll tell you one thing that you hear in this studio a little better. Silence. I'll tell you, that resonates a little more in the new studio. You know, when you got the all the stuff is crisp and clear, and there's a little more distance between me and Chris and me and Riley, when a joke tanks, boy, that resonates, doesn't it? What happened with Dave, little Goliath? Did you sleep in late today? What the hell was that about? He didn't come. There was no one on my floor reorganizing my binder for me this morning. What happened?
They cut my... They cut my car service.
Look at him looking at Brendan. Can I say that?
Thanks for putting the poor guy on the spot, Mark. Yeah. Now he's blaming it on Dave. He's like, yeah, good. Look at Dave. Look at him. He's looking around if he can say it. And it's not like the host of a national radio show. Just put him on the spot or something.
So what are you saying? Are you saying, Dave, let me understand this. You're saying that the executives here at Air America screwed you out of your car service?
Uh-oh. I don't want to say that because I feel so privileged to be working here.
Oh, there you go.
I have no complaints.
But you have a future in politics, clearly.
Yeah, I do.
Why don't you compose yourself and we'll talk a little later. I know you're probably worried now, and I just fed some grist into that mill of anxiety that comes out as zen, but it's really paralysis, as we discussed yesterday. So moving on, what was I going to do before? Oh, yeah, I was going to tell you what John Kerry said. In a speech at Brown University yesterday, Senator John Kerry kicked some ass, as he is wont to do occasionally. In talking about the aftermath of the hurricane, he said, quote, Brownie is to Katrina, that's Brown, that's Michael Brown, the ex-head of FEMA, quote, Brownie is to Katrina what Paul Bremer is to peace in Iraq, what George Tenet is to slam dunk intelligence, what Paul Wolfowitz is to parades paved with flowers in Baghdad, what Dick Cheney is to visionary energy policy, what Donald Rumsfeld is to basic war planning, what Tom DeLay is to ethics, and what George Bush is to mission accomplished and wanted dead or alive, end quote. I think he could add a better tag, but I enjoy the list. I like when Kerry picks up a little momentum, but I think the most important thing he said in that speech, Riley, was later in the speech, he said, quote, the plan they are designing for the Gulf Coast turns the region into a vast laboratory for right-wing ideological experiments, end quote. This is a very important point to make, because we've been talking about this all week, that on some level, this particular pack of renegade Republicans see this as a business opportunity, as a way to try out new ways to handle management, to privatize, to subcontract, to undercut people's pay by repealing the Davis-Bacon Act, to make it impossible for blacks or disabled or veterans to get jobs in the effort to reconstruct. See, they are using this, not unlike they tried to use Iraq, as this sort of free market lab.
Yeah, you know, what I find interesting is that John Kerry and John Edwards, both of whom may seek the 2008 presidential nomination, by the way, spoke out yesterday about 24 hours after Bill Clinton first savaged George W. Bush's performance with regard to Katrina. So I'm wondering whether Bill Clinton deciding to speak out kind of opened the floodgates here and kind of gave carte blanche to Kerry and Edwards and others, because I'm sure we're going to hear from more today. You know, I'm sure maybe by the end of the day we'll hear quote from Harry Reid, for example, the minority leader of the Senate.
I want a Howard Dean quote.
Uh-oh.
That's what I want. I want some fire. I want some fire from Howard Dean. When's that coming?
Well, let's hope it comes soon. Look, we are in a situation right now where this administration, time and time again, and it's interesting John Kerry put it in that kind of context, Time and time again, you see this administration bumbling. You see people who are supposed to be in charge of federal agencies, and it's not just FEMA. It's the Department of Defense. It's the vice presidency. It runs all the way to the top. These people don't know what they're doing. And now even people like the Wall Street Journal are starting to turn on them.
I'll tell you, Joe Klein's got a piece coming out in the next Time magazine about what's going on with Iraq and why it's not unlike Vietnam that we're going to get into a little later that will support that thesis entirely and succinctly. Very frightening stuff. I brought up the Davis-Bacon Act because I want to talk to Hugh Kaufman a little bit about this because he mentioned it in some interview that I read with him recently. This was basically a U.S. federal legislation which established the requirement for paying prevailing wages on public works projects. All federal government construction contracts and most contracts for federally assisted construction over $2,000 must include provisions for paying workers on site no less than the prevailing wages and fringe benefits paid to similar workers in the area. Now, in September 1992, George Bush Sr. Indefinitely suspended the act during the recovery from Hurricane Andrew. After Clinton took office in 93, he reinstated the act. But I want to talk to Hugh Kaufman because I think that what's happening is they are repealing it again in order to do the repairs necessary to New Orleans after this hurricane, which means that they are going to be subcontracting probably immigrants, probably people that have no health coverage, probably people who are unemployed, probably people they can completely exploit and use. They're sending people into that toxic mess without protective clothing. You see pictures of military people in there dressed in spacesuits, yet you see regular people, civilians, out there with mops. I mean, what's the difference there? I'm sure Hugh Kaufman will have something to tell us about that.
Yeah.
We're going to talk to him in just a few minutes. He is a senior policy analyst at the EPA, so stay tuned for that. It's coming up in just a couple minutes. 42 past the hour, Air America Radio's Morning Sedition program.
You're listening to Morning Sedition with Mark Maron and Mark Riley.
Now, we're not homosexual, but we are willing to learn.
Air America Radio.
Forty-six past the hour. It's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition program. I'm Mark Maron. It's Mark Riley.
Good morning.
We're glad you're with us today. It's Tuesday. It's a very exciting show. We're going to be in just, you know what, right now, let's do it. Our next guest is a senior policy analyst at the Environmental Protection Agency. He has 35 years experience at the EPA under Republican and Democratic administrations. Last week, he told us that there was a cover-up taking place by the Bush administration to hide the real dangers of returning to the Gulf Coast region. He joined us on the phone this morning from Washington, D.C. Good morning, Hugh Kaufman. Pleasure to have you back.
Oh, good morning, sir.
Good morning, Hugh Kaufman.
So I have to assume that you're experiencing a little bit, if any, relief that Ray Nagin has suspended this phase-in of the population of New Orleans.
Yes. A number of us technical people, were raising hell. I was noisily and a lot of people quietly. And luckily, I think it was Saturday.
Yeah.
The admiral in charge of FEMA, who's also the head of the Coast Guard,
Ted Allen,
discussed the fact with the started to discuss the fact with the news media. He had jumped into it, saying that this is not right and it's a mistake. And he listed some of the reasons, not all the reasons. And then the president concurred.
Let's talk a little bit, Hugh Kaufman, about the toxicity of the situation in New Orleans with or without water. Now, you talk in one of your interviews that I read about the repeal of the Davis-Bacon Act.
Yes, sir.
Now, and that alongside of the suspension of affirmative action policy a couple days ago, what does this mean for the people that they are looking to hire, and how are they planning on cleaning this up, and is it safe for those people?
Well, first of all, the Davis-Bacon Act deals with money. So that the people who will be doing the hard work of cleaning up, and on the front page of the Washington Post Saturday, it showed a picture of a poor African-American woman with no respiratory protection or any equipment, was doing cleanup inside the French Quarter. And then it showed, I think it was yesterday in the Washington Post, no, Sunday in the Washington Post, one of the garbage collectors collecting the trash. He was African American also, and he also had no protective gear.
So now you.
Then it showed one of the contractors with three contract personnel wearing protective gear and no respirator. So, of course, they were white. So it looks like some of these people who will be doing the cleanup can be hired by these companies for slave wages legally, which the Davis-Bacon Act would not allow to occur. On top of that, there's no enforcement of rules to make sure that they're wearing proper protective gear and respirators.
Right.
Everybody down there should be wearing a respirator. And yet, when you put on television, you'll see the heroes, the military guys, the volunteers, the police, the fire, the rescuers. None of them are wearing respirators.
Now, what is in the air? And what give us the toxic breakdown, both on the ground and in the air for us, would you, Hugh Kaufman?
Sure. In the air, because you have, the air smells putrid. Why does it smell putrid? Because there's millions of pounds of bacteria and viral-laden material. There's mold, there's fungus, there's toxic material from the petrochemical industry that's leaked. There are 44 major leaks. There apparently, according to the Coast Guard, is about as much leakage of petrochemicals in that area as there was from the Exxon Valdez case. All that's in the air. And in the water, and in the soil.
But now, Hugh Kaufman, didn't the EPA say that the air was now safe?
They said the air was safe. Then the media had interviews with me where I pointed out the discrepancies and the fact that there's no scientific analysis or data that shows that. Then the EPA came out with another statement saying it's safe and then it's not safe. So they've said everything.
That seems to be the policy of this administration. Is you get enough people saying contradictory things, it confuses everybody and they just think they're going to blow past it.
Exactly. Now, what's interesting, when the mayor had his press conference yesterday, the last question was asked about from a reporter about that very thing. And the mayor said the same thing. Well, EPA told us the air was safe, so I made the decision. Then the EPA said a second time they spoke out of both sides of their mouth and sounded like a bunch of lawyers. So, and then he started to look angry. And then he just walked away after that.
What do you think was behind Ray Nagin's insistence that, he get people back into the city as quickly as possible?
Well, there's a lot of pressure from the economic interests down there to have back to normal, the appearance of back to normal. Similar to 9/11. That's why people were rushed back in after the 9/11 thing in New York where the World Trade Center towers came down. Whitman went on TV and said the air was safe afterwards, even though it wasn't. And then everyone was rushed back in. On top of that, you save the insurance companies a tremendous amount of money having people go back in and cleaning up their own toxic waste. I mean, that's the largest toxic waste Superfund site in the history of the country down there.
Hugh Kaufman, what role, if any, somebody asked me this yesterday, and I was curious to get you the answers. What role, if any, does the Center for Disease Control play in the risk assessment in New Orleans? Do they have people on the ground down there?
The Center for Disease Control does, but it looks like they're the lead agency for carrying the administration's water on muddying the water as to the health effects that we have to be worried about.
Are they putting a smiley face on this?
They are putting a smile. What's happening right now, it's a fluid situation, no pun intended, is CDC is putting the smiley face on it, and EPA is trying to get under the table.
Are people getting sick now?
Yes, there are. Five people have died, and a lot of people, I think 80% of the responders have diarrhea. So that's just the effects from the bacteria and viruses.
Died of what, Hugh?
What?
What'd they die of?
I can't explain, I can't pronounce the names of the infections that they got from touching the water.
Oh, really? So it was from the waterborne infections?
Correct.
Now, let's go back to Ray Nagin for just a minute. What do you think the liability, because it seems to me that politically this guy is probably over. Now,
who knows? He he was a Republican just before the election. Then he changed to being a Democrat, and he won in a five-person race as a Democrat.
What was the liability? What if he had said no? What if he had said no to the business interests of New Orleans, and initially said, "I'm not going to move people back into this city"?
Well, I don't know. You know, I don't know what his financial situation is. He was an executive with Cox Broadcasting. And then he became mayor. He was a Republican. Then he became mayor as a Democrat. And now he and his family live in Dallas.
Right.
And so, you know, he's got to pay. I don't know how much he has to pay for renting that house in Dallas.
So this is a guy, you know, if he, as you said, and I believe I remember that, he was an employee at Cox who was done bidding for the Republicans before.
He was a Republican. He only became a Democrat like a week before the election so he could get elected in the five-man race.
Hugh Kaufman, what do you think the potential ramifications would be if, God forbid, this tropical storm Rita, which is now aimed at the Florida Keys, hits New Orleans?
Well, it depends what it hits at New Orleans at. If it rains, enough rain, there'll be more flooding that's going to have to be pumped out. The pumps are slowing down and putting the water out, which we knew because the top water will be easy to get out, but then the bottom half, as you start to get to the bottom half, there's more sludge and sediment, and so the water will come out slower. So if they get a lot of rain, they'll get more water, and they'll just have to run the pumps longer.
Is there a risk that the levees?
Nobody should be in there. Nobody, even if this rainstorm or tropical storm wasn't threatening. From a public health point of view, it's a catastrophe bringing people in there.
Because they didn't have a plan that was effective in place for taking people out then, before this last storm. I mean, they don't have one now, that's for sure.
Well, he told people to get out. Now, whether they've gotten... I don't know that any poor people have gone back in. Just like before, they didn't have automobiles and gasoline to get out. Well, now that they're out, they don't have automobiles and gasoline to get back in.
Right. And what about your forecast for getting people back into New Orleans? How many years?
Let me explain. The President of the United States...
We've only got about 40 seconds here.
The President of the United States has named a czar responsible for remediation and restoration. Mm. His name is Karl Rove.
Right.
He's a political hack who is a brilliant political hack for this president. He will be responsible for a $200 billion budget to remediate and restore the area. What do you think is going to happen with that money?
Be put in the pockets of their friends.
What kind of truth do you think will come out of that effort?
None.
Very little.
So what do you think is the right amount of time? 10 years still?
Well, some areas in a year or less.
Right.
Other areas, 10 years.
Thanks a lot, Hugh Kaufman. Really great to talk to you again. You have a good day.
Thank you.
That was Hugh Kaufman, Senior Policy Analyst at the Environmental Protection Agency. When we come back, which country do you think is the most violent country in the world? I've got an answer for you. Stay with us. 57 past the hour, Air America Radio. Good morning, geniuses. It's 6 past the hour, Air America Radio's Morning Sedition. I'm Mark Maron. That's Mark Riley.
Good morning.
How's everybody doing out there? We're down here in the new bunker-like studio downtown Manhattan. I'm very excited about the new facilities. I feel a little closer to them today. I feel a little more comfortable in them today. How about you, Riley?
I feel all right.
Getting the hang of it. Well, you look good sitting in your new chair.
Well, this is a kind of strange day for me, so...
Okay.
Yeah. Pardon me if I'm not my usual whatever.
But okay.
I got to go to a funeral for a friend of mine that passed.
Okay, I'm sorry to hear about your friend. I mean, funerals, you know, maybe you get some closure. You know, sometimes you go to a funeral and everybody's there, the family's there, and it kind of, you know, it puts it into the real frame for you.
Yeah.
All right. Well, look, you can join Morning Sedition's March on Washington. We'll be broadcasting live from the XM radio studios in D.C. this Friday, the day before the Green Fest and the big anti-war rally. We'll have Cindy Sheehan there live in person. You need tickets for this one, folks, so go to morningsedition.com and enter to win a free pair. This contest contest is open until Wednesday at 9 a.m. Eastern Time. Also, coming up momentarily, can you guess what the most violent country on earth is? I'll have that answer for you in just a few minutes. But right now, for those of you who are just tuning in, here are a few highlights of what we talked about on the program. It's time for today's Morning Sedition Cliff Notes. Democrats have a 12-point advantage over Republicans in polling for the 2006 midterm elections. Polling indicates Democrats could do very well in the 2006 elections as long as they can find their message to, hey, we're not Republicans. A GOP spokesman said, quote, we are aware of the poll, but we think our televised public flogging of Michael Brown scheduled for this year's Super Bowl halftime show will reassure voters the GOP is aware of their concerns, end quote. New research suggests that psychopaths make the best financial traders. A team of U.S. scientists has found that functional psychopaths make better financial decisions than the rest of us. This does not include the subset of functional psychopaths that pay prostitutes before they kill and eat them. That's just stupid, according to the study. CNN announced a deal today with Charles Manson. His new show will be called Charlie's Picks. A CNN spokesman said, at the end of our meeting, Manson said, kill the pigs. I sold my pork commodities short just before the market dropped and made a bundle. The guy is a prophet. A report shows, here we're going to tip it, we're going to give you the answer. A report shows that Scotland is the world's most violent country. The Scottish diet and lifestyle may be contributing to the problem. Street fighters are often told to discuss their problems peacefully over a traditional Scottish meal of haggis and deep-fried candy bars. But that seems to make the problem worse. Those are your Morning Sedition Cliff Notes, and there's the answer to that question. I would be curious to know how many people actually guess that. In a UN report, has been named the most violent country in the world, and England and Wales recorded the second highest numbers. Did you know that, Riley? Would you have even thought that? I mean, before you saw this information, would you have ever thought that Scotland would be the most violent country in the world?
Absolutely not.
It's bizarre, isn't it?
It's strange. And the strangest thing is, it appears as though Scotland has gotten most violent in the last 20 years.
Exactly. And it's, I guess a lot of times these numbers, because it's a small country, you're dealing with a per capita kind of thing, a percentage ratio. But apparently violent crimes, as you said, has doubled over the last 20 years. The attacks have been fueled by what they call, quote unquote, booze and blades culture in West Scotland, which has claimed more than 160 lives in the past 5 years. 2,000 Scots are attacked every week. How many people are in Scotland? That must be like everybody.
Yeah, it seems like they get around to everybody pretty quickly if they're doing 2,000 a week.
I know. What do they just, do they plan? It's like, are you attacking or are you being attacked today? What are you doing? What's your responsibility today? Since January, there have been 13 murders, 145 attempted murders, and 1,100 successful assaults involving knives.
How many?
100. 100 involving knives. 1,100. I'm
1100.
Sorry. 1,100. 1,100 successful assaults involving, I guess that would be what they're referring to as the booze and blades culture.
Yeah.
They just get drunk and go out and stab people. I guess that's a hobby. I don't know what else there is to do in Scotland.
Insane.
Maybe, I don't know. Is there a lot to do in Scotland?
Play golf.
Well, if you don't play golf, you can stab people.
Yeah, right.
Hey, I've actually been to Scotland, you guys.
Who's that in my head? Dan Pashman,
hey,
son
me.
Of Lewis and Linda Pashman. How are you, my friend?
Good, how are you guys?
I'm pretty good.
I
was in Scotland briefly. I got drunk, and I had a meal of haggis, and I tried the blood pudding and stuff.
Yeah.
And I passed out.
100 times?
Oddly, the entertainment they had provided for us, I was on a tour, like a team tour kind of thing. Most of us just got stabbed once. But there are other packages available where you can get stabbed.
Uh-oh.
What was your story, Dan?
Well, I actually saw some of the most beautiful places on earth up in northern Scotland, which is why I was surprised to hear this study that it was so violent, you know.
Well,
but when I was living in London, which obviously is not far from Scotland, I saw this same kind of culture. I saw fights breaking out in the dormitories, the universities, there people breaking bottles over each other's heads. It was ridiculousness.
Really? Is that just? But were they just partying, or was that a bad thing? It's interesting though, because when I was in Scotland, the countryside is beautiful, but you know, if you have binoculars or something, usually in Scotland, if you're looking at the countryside and you look into the denseness of the beautiful green kind of the forest there, you generally can see someone being stabbed. You know, just past a tree, and usually they're there. You just have to look for them. You've got to be good at that.
Maybe it's so beautiful you just have to stab someone.
Well, exactly. Just to come down from it. You're like,
right.
Oh my God, what do I, this is too much. Come here. Here's a, we got some more interesting and important, relevant information for people. Which country? Here's another pop quiz. Which country hates Jews the most, and which country is the most pro-Christian? And we'll go with both sides on this one. I don't want to make it sound too weird. You guessed it. If you guessed Jordan, Jordan leads the world in Jew hating. A recent poll. No, this is true, man.
It's good to lead the world in something.
Dig these numbers. A recent poll said that, you know, how many percent of Jordanians view Jews unfavorably? 100%. 100%. Like everybody they ask, like, what do you think of Jews? Oh, bad. No. Awful. Horrible. What country likes the Jews the best? You know? The Netherlands.
Yeah.
85% are okay with Jews. Not just okay, they happen to like them. They went out of their way to say, friends, I have friends who are Jewish. And but they
got a dim view of Muslims over there.
Very dim, the dimmest apparently, yeah. Riley. But here's a real trick, not a trick question, but a surprising answer. Which country likes Christians the most? See, now I would have thought, what would you have thought, Riley? Maybe Italy,
Mississippi.
Yeah, that's a specific strand of Christianity. It's Russia, man. Russia. Did you guess that?
I mean, maybe a reaction to, you know, godless communism or whatever. That
Christ is back!
Yeah.
92% of those polled had favorable views of Christians, followed by, this is another weird one, Turkey. 63% in Turkey liked Christians.
Yeah, but weren't they also pretty low, though, then?
No, Turkey had the most unfavorable view.
Yeah, 63 is actually the most unfavorable view.
That's
yeah.
different. So Turkey hates Christians.
Yeah.
I had my information wrong. I knew that sounded a little weird.
I was going to go to Turkey.
Yeah?
I was going to go to Turkey. Now, not so much.
Really? Do you find that you make tourist plans revolving around, I will not go to a place that doesn't enjoy Christians?
Yeah.
I'm going to go to Rome. I know I'm wanted there.
I'll be okay there, Kalo.
That's very Catholic. That's the capital of Catholicism. When are you going there?
Hopefully November.
Well, good. The survey also found that support for Al-Qaeda and suicide bombers is dwindling in Islamic countries. You know, I wonder how that kind of unfolded. What do you think of Al-Qaeda and suicide bombers? Used to like them, not so much now. I liked the Bin Laden very much originally, but now it's not so good. Not good. Look, in a related story, not a related story, it's got nothing to do with it, actually. And I'm not even going to segue to that because I don't even know what the hell I was thinking. When we come back, we're going to talk a little bit more about New Orleans. We're also going to talk about Iraq, because while we were all busy, you know, concerned and worried and staying on top of what was going on in New Orleans, Iraq has gotten out of control. It's much worse than it ever has been, and there are indications that that some factions of the U.S. government, some factions of the U.S. military, are really, you know, just don't care. It's not unlike New Orleans in that sense. We're going to talk a little bit about that. So stay with us. It's 15 past the hour. You're listening to Air America Radio's Morning Sedition.
Hi, this is Rob Corddry from The Daily Show, here to remind you that when top news reporters and investigative journalists like me want their news skewed so far to the left it's wearing a dress, we turn to Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Nineteen past the hour. It's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition program. I'm Mark Maron. It's my friend Mark Riley.
Good morning.
We're crunching the news here. We're parsing the situation. Yesterday, George Bush. Can I quote George Bush in response to finally getting on board? Or maybe he was initially, but he is letting Vice Admiral Tad Allen, who is on the ground in New Orleans overseeing the federal response to the emergency down there, lead the way. And Bush said, quote, "We're cautious about encouraging people to return at this moment in history," end quote. In history, isn't time the word he was looking for, this moment in time? See, he's got history on the brain, Riley. I think this is one of those weird slips that he made because he's doing everything he can to not screw everything up anymore because he's concerned about his place in history. So that was sort of sitting on his brain, this moment in history. What a narcissistic, self-centered bastard this guy is. So now he's being cautious because he can't afford to lose any more points in the poll. Bush backed, as I said, he backed Vice Admiral Thad Allen, and now Ray Nagin, the mayor of New Orleans, said, well, maybe we should wait. He's citing Rita, the storm that's sort of brewing off the coast now that could actually hit Texas and New Orleans, as his primary reason for stopping his phasing of the population back into New Orleans.
Well, remember, folks, there may be Admiral Allen, there may be Ray Nagin, there are a lot of players here, but the player that everyone needs to keep their eye out for, is Karl Rove, who is in charge of all this. And we'll see what kind of job he actually does. We heard Hugh Kaufman say, you know, he's a brilliant hack, but he's still a hack. And yeah. Why is he down there doing this?
Hugh Kaufman, the EPA senior analyst that we spoke to before, we spoke to a couple of times. Now, the thing about Karl Rove is that the one beautiful thing in light of what's the horror that is happening is that he cannot control the weather. He cannot control the forces of nature as of yet.
He can't?
No, I hope not. Maybe, as I said before, he might be on top of the White House up there with a Wilhelm Reich Oregonian, the Oregon Charger Cloudbuster making storms, but I don't know. I believe that this Rita thing, again, came a little out of left field, and I think he was planning to triangulate and sort of strangle Ray Nagin and having somebody to blame in this. I think he is playing politics, and as John Kerry said, I think quite insightfully, that what we're seeing down there is, quote, the plan they are designing for the Gulf Coast turns the region into a vast laboratory for right-wing ideological experiments, end quote. And those experiments we are seeing fail in Iraq. According to Joe Klein, an upcoming piece in Time magazine that he wrote, it shows Iraq. Now, this is insane stuff, I think, that when Iraq was falling, all right, when it was going down, Saddam Hussein met in the desert with a few of his closest advisors and told them to start, quote, rebuilding your networks, end quote. And as of now, U.S. intelligence sources say that they still don't know enough about the secret web of what is known in Iraq as the Al-Athika, or trust networks. There is no leader, but their goal is clear. It is to remove the current controlling government in Iraq and return it to the Sunni minority. That is what is at the heart of the insurgency. Now, we haven't gotten into this stuff in a while, Riley. And we've talked in Mick Ware and many of our people who have spent time in Iraq who said that, you know, foreign fighters were coming in. Many of them were being used as suicide bombers. But now an American official, actually says that foreign fighters are actually the ordnance.
Yeah.
And that the Sunnis are running this thing.
Well, it's interesting. You know, Joe Klein's piece portrays Saddam Hussein as a sort of Johnny Appleseed as his government was falling, saying to people, look, you know, just lay low for a while, and when the time's right, you'll know what to do. And they are moving forward. And what's interesting about this, Mark, is that this same piece confirms something that I believe it was Mick that told us some months ago, and that is that the American government and the Iraqis have been involved in down-low negotiations with some of the insurgents, people with, as according to this article, blood on their hands.
Yes, and also it sort of confirms a lot of what we've been talking about before the hurricane in terms of Iraq, is that the U.S. is good at fighting, but not necessarily in this type of guerrilla situation that is ongoing. It could go on forever. They don't have enough intelligence, and the Department of Intelligence, the Defense Department of Intelligence, the DIA, what is that? That's the
Defense Intelligence Agency
is more concerned, apparently, according to some of these guys on the ground, with China, North Korea, and Iran, and they aren't prioritizing Iraq. So I don't quite understand that they're just going to let this thing sink like this and go on forever. The intelligence officers talked to in the piece stress these points. They believe that Saddam's inner circle, especially those from military bureau, initially organized the insurgency's support structure, and that networks led by former Saddam associates are the ones in charge of everything right now. The Bush administration's fixation on finding weapons of mass destruction in 2003 diverted precious intelligence resources that could have helped thwart the insurgency that was growing at that time.
Right. It would have been nice if they had let Hans Blix do his job and actually gotten the intelligence on this insurgency, or maybe even let Hans Blix do his job, take him at his word, and then we wouldn't have had a war in the first place.
So some of these guys, some of these officials who are on the ground, some of these guys in the Pentagon are actually saying that the accumulation of blunders has led a Pentagon guerrilla warfare expert to conclude, quote, we are repeating every mistake we made in Vietnam, end quote. And that's a very scary statement, considering how long it could go on for and just how long the failure could go on for. But I'll tell you one thing that's happening, you know, despite however many Americans die or however chaotic it gets on the ground, someone in this country, in America, is making millions and millions of dollars off of this war in Iraq.
Absolutely. And see, if we are repeating mistakes we made in Vietnam, remember, folks, that, well, some of you may not, but in 1968, Marin was a wee child back then, but in 1968, Richard Nixon won election by saying he had a secret plan to get America out of Vietnam. That's why he beat Hubert Humphrey. It was a very narrow margin. Now, what happens in 08 if we're still in Iraq and any really great numbers. And the Republicans now are faced with the possibility of Democrats coming in and saying the same thing. We got a plan to get U.S. troops out of Iraq.
Well, I think that's great speculation. I'm all for that.
Yeah.
You know, and now what we're seeing also is that under the government of Iyad Alawi, the last government in Iraq, the CIA U.S. dude said apparently as much as $2 billion may have been stolen through a series of military contracts and shady deals. The current finance minister says that if you look at the total procurement budget of the defense ministry, it is equal to the amount that was stolen through bad deals on crappy equipment and whatnot. And that amount is $1 billion. These are those contracts that we heard about before, Riley. We didn't know where the money was going, who was getting it, but it's clear that somebody robbed, they're saying now, what could be up to $2 billion out of that country in all the chaos. And Iyad Alawi facilitated it. He was a CIA stooge, and there's no reason not to think that some of the contractors that have been supported by the Bush administration that have got the no-bid contracts have pilfered this money and made away like bandits. And I think that's what I think that's all they care about.
Yeah, it is. And the finance minister says we've got nothing but scraps of metal.
Yeah, if they cut and run, someone made a fortune. I'll tell you that right now.
Yep.
We're going to come back with the we've got the liberal confessional coming up. We've also got Tyco executives being sentenced to only 25 years max.
Good.
That seems unreasonable. Should be a lot more. 27 past the hour. Air America Radio's Morning Sedition program.
Morning Sedition with Mark Maron and Mark Riley on Air America Radio.
Thirty-four past the hour. It's Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Hey,
you're listening to Air America Radio's Morning Sedition program. If you want to go out tonight and hear some comedy in the New York City area, Morning Sedition's own funny man Bruce Cherry, along with comedian Greg Giraldo and others, are performing a benefit at Stand Up New York tonight to celebrate the UN's International Day of Peace. Stand Up New York is on 78th Street, just off Broadway. For tickets, call 212-595-0850. Bruce is funny. A lot of people didn't realize he did stand up, and Giraldo's funny.
Yeah.
How come I'm not going to be there, Riley? Because I'll be sleeping.
There you go.
Join the Morning Sedition March on Washington. We'll be broadcasting live from the XM radio studios in Washington, D.C. this Friday, the day before the Green Fest and the big anti-war rally. Cindy Sheehan's going to be with us live in person. And who knows who else? I've been hearing rumors about some pretty big names.
Don Rumsfeld?
Maybe. Politicians, I'll tell you that. You'll need tickets for this one. Go to morningsedition.com and enter to win a free pair. The contest is open until Wednesday at 9 a.m. Eastern Time. Now let's get into this. L. Dennis Kosolowski, the former CEO of Tyco International and former Tyco finance chief Mark Swartz, were sentenced yesterday to up to 25 years in prison for stealing hundreds of millions of dollars from the company. The Supreme Court justice ordered the two to pay a total of $134 million in restitution, and in addition, Kosolowski was fined $70 million and Swartz $35 million. They were convicted of 22 counts of grand larceny, falsifying business records, security fraud, and conspiracy. The thing that kills me, Riley, Kosolowski's lawyer asked the judge to be lenient because he said Kosolowski is, quote, a good man. He's a decent person, and his reputation has been tarnished, but his life should not be destroyed, end quote. 22 counts of grand larceny, falsifying business records, securities fraud, and conspiracy. He's a good person, Riley.
Well, hey.
He's a decent man.
He's a decent man. His wife cried at the sentencing, and well, she should, since one of the things that this guy did was give her a $2 million toga party for her birthday.
On an island. I remember seeing that video footage.
Yeah.
Swartz's lawyer said, quote, he was a man of remarkable decency, unquote. 22 counts of grand larceny, falsifying business records, securities fraud, and conspiracy. He's a remarkable, decent fellow, this guy. He's just misunderstood when he was pilfering that dough.
$150 million in illegal bonuses alone.
Yeah.
$150 mil.
But you know that these guys are so detached, that lack so much conscience, that they're like, they felt entitled to it. And they still believe on some level, because of the circles they were running in and the way they treated their immediate family, maybe their dogs, that they are good people that don't deserve to be punished. I mean, when you look at how people are punished, I mean, 25 years... for the type of crimes it did, for the amount of money they stole, seems like too little to me when you look at things like this. When you look at a, like this guy, Leandro Andrade, stole videotapes valued at $153 from two Kmart stores and got a 50-year to life prison sentence. Andrade, a 37-year-old heroin addict, is one of the many California criminals who were given life sentences, which resulted from nonviolent, low-level felony convictions.
That's the three strikes you're out rule
right.
in California.
How about Daryl Beast, a 46-year-old father of four with no criminal history, was locked up in maximum security prison for 15 years to life after he signed for a FedEx package delivered to his uncle's house that turned out to be cocaine. Now, these are little guys, and these big guys, they might do 8 years. What do you think they're going to do? They're up for parole in 8 years, and they're crying, and they're probably not going to go to a real prison where they're going to be taught a real lesson, and they're whining about this. I mean, they should be in prison for 100 years.
Well, they're going to get locked up, in all likelihood, in a dormitory with a few bars on it. That's the worst that's going to happen to these guys. But, you know, what we're starting to see, Mark, is a parade of corporate American executives on their way to the can. John Regas, 15 years for looting and frauding.
You know
Philadelphia.
What I say he gets?
Whoa! You know, Timothy Regas, 20 years. Bernie Ebers, 25 years. So, and by the way...
Bernie's tough.
Yeah. And by the way, still to come... Ken Lay. He goes on trial in January. Oh, come on. You can't shoot him before he gets justice. Or can you?
I don't know if there's a sound to take him back.
Oh, sorry.
Hold on. Sorry, Ken.
Yes. Look, I am all for locking these guys up. And, you know, it really does. And this is how arrogant these guys are. It doesn't make any difference that Tyco is still a thriving company. That makes no difference whatsoever in terms of what these guys were convicted of having done.
They think they're entitled to it. It's sociopathic.
Yeah, it, on a certain level, it is completely and utterly corporate. Corporately sociopathic.
But you know what? That might mean they're good businessmen. According to a team of scientists that have found that the emotionally impaired are more willing to gamble for high stakes and that people with brain damage may make better financial decisions than most of us. The study found that emotions lead some people to avoid taking risks even when potential benefits outweighed the cost. So the study they did included a group with normal people and then a bunch of people who suffered lesions on the brain that affects emotions, and apparently the brain damaged people made better decisions because they were emotionally disconnected. So that means that psychopaths who are emotionally disengaged may take the risks that lead to greater successes, and then they kill their friends.
Well, wait a minute.
You know, there's a give and take with this
stuff. There must be, but I mean, does that mean that, let's say, Bill Gates and Warren Buffett and George Soros, are these people all nuts?
I think they're talking more about, you know, financial traders. And certainly someone like this Kosowski guy, who is able to disengage that much from, you know, from committing a crime as big as he did, and literally not feel any contrition about it, to the point where he's saying, I'm a decent guy, I had it coming.
America, you should spend a week on Wall Street. Every American should spend a week on Wall Street, on that trading floor, and you see how people are. It is an amazing, amazing thing to watch folks trying to make money.
Oh, you know, guys, Mark, Brendan. You guys really need to watch. If you doubt the validity of that study, you need to watch the show on CNBC called Mad Money.
Jim Cramer.
Love that guy.
I love it because I hate it. Yeah. It's the most frightening show you've ever seen, and they are all psychopaths. They are the. You remember the movie American Psycho?
Yeah.
It's a studio full of about 80 of those guys.
They're just all manic and cracked out of their head?
Well, it's not even just the cracked out part. It's that these guys are addicted to that rush of the risk of these big money deals. But this guy Cramer feeds into all that, and the whole show is just this complete, you know, psychotic experiment of how much can we scream and yell about what we're trading. It's frightening.
You actually wanted to have him on the show, right?
I or somebody who would talk about what a freak he is.
Yeah, I'm not that kind of person. I do not. If I go gamble, I lose about $800. I feel horrendous because that's what happened. Remember when I went to Atlantic City? I only wanted to spend like $300. I was willing to lose that, and then I ended up losing $800, and that was really the most I'd ever lost. But I know some guys that are like, $800, what are you, a wuss?
Yeah.
How about $5,000? How about $10,000? How about $20,000? The amount that I beat myself up over that amount was too much for me to handle.
You got to have an envelope system like Kalo.
Yeah.
Yeah, dude. That worked out well. Day two, I was down. No more envelopes.
What was that?
You put money in envelopes and you gave them to your girlfriend?
I put $200 in 10 envelopes.
Yeah.
And I put them in a safe.
$200 in each envelope? Wait,
was this a safe that you knew the combination to?
Yep.
Wow. That's a good system. I remember one time I was in Vegas with my brother, and I haven't been there in years, and I literally, my brother come up to me and he says, give me your ATM card. Just give it to me.
That's bad
give me the ATM card. Ouch. And it's not like we're even spending a lot of money, but you know, I am slightly compulsive. Sometimes it's not easy being a liberal, my friends. We all stray from the straight and narrow and from time to time. But when we need to unburden ourselves, we can always confess our liberal sins. If you want to take a turn in the liberal confessional, give us a call at 866-303-2270. But right now it's my turn. Bless me, Brother Riley, for I've sinned.
How can I ease your burden, my son?
Well, look, ever since Harry Reams came on and talked about Inside Deep Throat, my attitudes about porn have been changing, Riley.
In what way?
I don't know. I have less guilt about it when I'm, you know.
Mark,
you
please.
Know,
there are children listening?
No, not that. I mean, I just feel less guilty about watching it. You see, all my ideas, all my guilt about porn were instilled in me by several radical feminists that I dated. My guilt about porn stems from those girlfriends telling me that the women in the films were all victims.
And so what has changed since Harry Reams came into your life?
Well, he says that the women in porn, like Linda Lovelace, aren't forced to be there. They're making money like everyone else on the set. They want to be there. If the women on camera are being exploited, how come no one ever says the men on camera are being exploited? No one ever says that. Pro-porn feminists have argued that women are actually empowered by doing porn. No one's being exploited. Some people just grow up wanting to be porn stars, Riley.
So, I'm not quite sure, Mark, what you're saying.
I guess I just feel guilty about not feeling guilty about watching porn.
Okay, I have a penance idea for you, Mark.
All right, hit me, Riley.
I want you to take this video camera and give it to your wife, Mishnah.
Yeah.
And I want her to videotape you dancing and posing in the nude for the camera.
Okay.
Let Mishnah direct you, tell you what to do, and tell her to make it as degrading as possible for you. Then I want you to watch it.
Okay.
Alone.
Right.
Then I want you to call me and tell me you've finished and that you don't feel like a victim.
Wow. You know, Riley, I already have tapes like that. Can I watch pre-existing ones?
No! Now go forth and sin. No more.
All right.
Amen.
Well, thank you, Brother Riley. Now, if anyone else out there wants to confess and seek absolution in our liberal confessional, you can give us a call right now at 866-303-2270. That's 866-303-2270. We'll be listening to your sins when we return. It's 44 past the hour, Air America Radio's Morning Sedition.
Join the Morning Sedition. Right now, call 866-303-2270.
What?
That's 866-303-2270.
You don't know until you've tried this.
Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Damn good.
Hey, it's 49 past the hour, Air America Radio's Morning Sedition. We're taking your confessions here in the Liberal Confessional. Our first confession comes from Kim in Portland. How are you, Kim? How have you sinned, Kim?
Hey, Kim.
Hey, you guys. I really like your show.
Thank you.
I try to be a good liberal.
Yeah.
I understand that homeless people, you know, they have to have a place they need to go. It's getting to be winter here. It's going to start raining.
Right.
And, you know, I understand that, and it doesn't bother me until what happens, some homeless guy moves into a stolen car down the street from where I live.
Okay.
And so what's the first thing I do is I start to feel really unsafe, and I call the police, and I get really upset at the police when they say all they can do is ask him to leave when he's in his car.
Right.
And I just want him to go away.
This is just a guy that's living in the car down the street from you.
Yeah, and he's a tweaker, I think.
Oh, so he's not just a homeless guy, he's a speed addict.
Yeah.
All right, so you have completely lost your liberal ability to be compassionate or empathetic in this particular case because it's right down the street from you, and you're scared for your life because you've assumed that this guy is just a day or so away of, you know, doing something bad.
Well, not that bad, but a little bit.
Okay. Well, I think there's only one way to pay a penance. Don't you think, Riley? I think Kim, that you're going to have to do what I call the homeless outward bound.
Uh-oh.
You yourself are going to have to you're going to have to be homeless for a week just to see what it's like to make people, you know, be scared of you. Well, no, really, maybe here's what you should do. Go down the street and tell the guy to get out of the car that you want to live there. How would that be?
In his car?
And yeah, that's it. Why don't you just trade places? You saw that movie, right? Why don't you go down the street and let that guy live in your house and you live in the car for a week?
I don't think she's on the bus.
Yeah, I don't think she's going for it.
I don't think that would work for me, but, you know, we could, you know, anything's possible.
You know, I understand your concern, but instead of calling the cops, have you thought about asking the guy if there's any way you can help him?
My neighbor and I have done. My neighbor does homeless outreach.
And what'd you find out?
Well, he doesn't want to be helped right now.
Because he's strung out on drugs?
Yeah.
And that's his car that he's living in?
No.
Really? Mm-hmm. It's not his car, but he's living in it.
Yep.
Yeah. Well, you know what? I got to be honest with you, Kim. I mean, as you know, I was trying to be ironic and funny in your punishment, but it seems to me that you did take steps that were fairly decent in terms of progressive values. You have someone you know who's a homeless outreach person, and you tried to help the guy, and he doesn't want any help. So maybe you should just give him more drugs and facilitate him hitting bottom quicker, and maybe he'll check into treatment quicker. Well, how's that? Is that a better idea?
Well, you know, that might work.
There you go.
That I have in my bar.
I'm just trying to meet you halfway, Kim. Thanks for calling us so much.
Thanks for calling, Kim. She could always call, you know, and have somebody come in and bring in a tow truck and just tow, when the guy's away one day, just tow the stolen car out.
Oh, man. You know, it gets a little dicey because, you know, when you want to help people, especially people that are in desperate need, that desperation comes from a drug problem, you just don't know where that's going to end exactly.
Well, that's true.
Okay, Linda in Kentucky, what is your sin, Linda?
Hey, how are you?
I'm okay.
Hey,
how are you?
Yeah, I've got a real sin here to confess.
Okay. What is it?
Right before Katrina hit.
Mm-hmm.
My son and I were having discussion about the economical and opportunity diversity with black people and as compared to poor white folks.
Mm-hmm.
And I sit there and argued with him and sound telling him that, look, even though I'm very liberal, I sort of believed that this country had a better handle on helping than what they had. And I sat there and argued with him and said, no, 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 we wouldn't let anything bad happen. You know, we would help people. We're not, you know, we're just not going to let people die or starve to death or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And after an hour of this argument, you know, discussion, it wasn't heated or anything.
Okay.
We both were, you know, giving our opinions pretty forcefully. And this went on for about an hour.
Yeah.
And then it was just like two or three days later, Katrina hit.
Right.
And it opened my eyes to where my son was completely right and I was completely wrong. And it hurts me to know that, you know, that we have people in charge. It's not so much the people of the country, because you saw how they've helped out.
Right.
True.
But the people in charge actually allowed these people to die.
Yeah. Yeah, I hear you.
They just rescued some guy who'd been in this house for 18 days with a gallon and a half of water.
Unbelievable, right? So
yeah,
you
the
just
first thing he has to do is be taken to Taco Bell.
Yeah, I know. They're flying
him
out in the
helicopter. He asked him to take him.
Yeah,
to Taco
Bell. He wanted to go to Taco Bell, get a gordita.
Yeah, right.
Or something. So, well, you know, I understand what you're saying, Linda. So you're basically your sin is that you just assumed that this country that the government would never allow that to happen.
Exactly. I had blinders on. I mean, I knew that this administration was money grubbing,
mm-hmm.
and out for their own bottom line.
Yeah.
And that kind of thing. But I never in my wildest dreams thought that they would stand there with their finger up their nose.
I hear you.
We're on radio. I have to be nice.
Yeah, that was nice work.
I think what you're going to have to do, just because there have been attempts to wake people up, certainly in the last few weeks, I think that your penance, given that you sound very contrite and you're willing to admit your sin, I think what you have to do is go out and get Kanye West's new album. And maybe,
which I did yesterday, by the way.
And, yeah, huh? Yeah. Go out and get Kanye West's new album. He's okay. A gentleman that got on TV and said that George Bush hates black people, and just have a listen.
Well, I will do that. I will really do that.
How old is your son?
My son's 23.
He's 23. No. Is he in college or something?
Pardon?
He's not in college or anything, is he?
Not right now.
Oh, okay. All right, because I was going to say you could, like, pay his tuition for a semester or something since he was right and you weren't.
Well, you know, it's what he was right about that upsets me the worst.
I understand.
Well, I'll tell you, you know, Linda, and just in being completely honest, there's a lot of people, and you make a great point in that there's a lot of liberals, there's a lot of progressives, there's a lot of Democrats that still want to believe the best about this country, and there's no reason that we shouldn't. And this administration has made it very difficult to do that, and every time something as horrible as Katrina happens and really exposes these guys for what they are, it just breaks our heart a little bit. So I think you were just having a certain amount of faith. I don't think it was that horrendous a transgression.
Well, that, you know, it's like I said, I just would like for one time to see these neocons put country before party. I don't think they're ever going to do it.
I've had enough of them. I just want them out.
Let's get the pitchforks and the torches and start marching.
Oh, there you go.
Thanks, Linda, for your call. You take care. Have a good day.
Oh, you know what would have been a great penance for her? She should have come to Washington for our show on Friday.
Yeah, how far is Kentucky from Washington? Some parts are...
Some parts aren't that far. I mean, she could get there on a bus or a car.
I kind of lose my mileage gauge when I go down south, but I know that, you know, because Washington, D.C. is pretty southern in some respects.
Oh, yeah, in a lot of ways. It's pretty southern.
Well, look, you know, when we come back, well, we're not going anywhere. We're going to be sitting here in our new studio enjoying maybe a cup of coffee or something. But we're going to talk a little bit more about what the most violent country on earth is. If you didn't get that before and you want to know, try and figure it out, and we'll tell you. We might even have a reporter there to give us a report from there. It's 57 past the hour. It's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition. It's 6 past the hour. Good morning. I'm Mark Maron. That's Mark Riley.
Good morning.
You're listening to Morning's Edition here on Air America Radio. What's going on right now, Riley, is that as of yesterday, Mayor Ray Nagin of New Orleans said, we're going to stop this. We're not going to put people back into the city. We're not going to allow people to go back to their homes. He's saying that it's because the tropical storm Rita could become a hurricane, might hit New Orleans, might hit Texas. But this is something that that Vice Admiral Tad Allen, the guy on the ground for the federal government overseeing the restoration or the reparation or the reconstruction, however you want to put it, the pilfering of New Orleans by Republican crony companies. But he said it wasn't safe. Bush believed him. And I think that they got into Ray Nagin's head and say, look, you know, we can't do this right now. But I also think that they're the ones that had something to do with that. Bush anyways had said to Ray Nagin that we should do it before.
Well, here's going to be the key. What happens once this latest storm Rita is no longer an issue? Will Nagin go on with his plan to bring people back in, or will he hold off until someone tells him it is actually safe to start bringing people into certain areas?
Well, if we're going to listen to our buddy Hugh Kaufman at the EPA, the senior policy advisor, it's not going to be safe there for quite a bit of time. The real concern now is to get people who are temporary workers in the cleanup effort, you know, suited up properly. I mean, you see these pictures of people in protective gear, the military people who are there doing reconnaissance in terms of looking for bodies, helping people, some cleanup. They're wearing outfits, toxic outfits, protective gear. And you see regular people just out there with mops and washcloths. And apparently, according to Hugh Kaufman, some of these military guys should even be wearing respirators.
Well, you know what? The one thing that Hugh Kaufman said that scared, I would think would scare anybody, is that 80%, 4 out of every 5 responders have diarrhea.
I like that you said diarrhea so emphatically, Riley. It makes me very excited.
Well, you know what happens? People get dehydrated. People don't realize that a byproduct of diarrhea is that the fluids just flush out of your body.
That's right. It sucks the liquid right out of you.
And where are you going to get treated? There are no hospitals that are up and running.
There's no hospitals because the infrastructure for hospitals are complete. The health infrastructure in New Orleans completely kaput. Nothing going on. 80% of these guys coming down with diarrhea from bacteria-based or viral-based disease in the water. Five people have died who were part of the effort, or maybe not. It's not clear whether they were part of the effort, but Hugh Kaufman said five people have died from these diseases that are in the water. So it's definitely not safe, you know, with or without Rita coming. And this is the good decision on Ray Nagin's part. Now, moving into some other things, I'll tell you, the poll numbers for George Bush and the Republicans are going down. America did not buy the crap that he had to sell after Katrina, standing there in front of a picture of slave owner Andrew Jackson, in front of a statue of Andrew Jackson, and in front of a church, trying to look aristocratic and noble and present a message of humility and religion. Did not take. Democrats have opened up to a 12% lead over the GOP rivals in 14 months before the 2006 congressional elections.
This is good news for Democrats, assuming that they don't blow it, okay? That they don't do anything that will allow George Bush and the Republicans in Congress, who should not be let off the hook, to regain their footing in all this. And half the Republicans in Congress are scared to death about exactly what the fiscal ramifications of the Katrina cleanup are going to be anyway.
Yeah, and this administration has taken hits from both sides. It's taken it from the Democrats, and it's taken it from their own, because they are being seen by fiscal conservatives, or those people who call themselves fiscal conservatives, still evil people on the right, who see them as spending too much, that this government has outspent almost anybody and outborrowed almost any government in recent memory.
Well, yeah, and not everybody can live in a gated community with private security that'll blow your head off if you get near the gate. And a lot of these guys, you know, they are that disconnected from other people's reality. That's the only way, Mark, I can figure that people would be that cold-hearted.
That's exactly the future that these people want, Riley. That's exactly why they let poor people suffer. That's exactly why they let poor people die in New Orleans. That is exactly the future they want. That is what you just said, gated communities with, like, machine gun turrets,
yep,
as security outposts. That is what life in a neocon America should look like. That is the extent of your police force, the guys with the guns that just shoot marauding poor people out in front of the fortress.
And let me tell you something. I've been in countries where they do that, and it is not pretty.
Yeah, as John Kerry said last night, quote, the plan they are designing for the Gulf Coast turns the region into a vast laboratory for right-wing ideological experiments. Well, if Iraq is any indication of how those experiments will play out, which it was, this was the free market utopia. This was going to come off easy. They were just going to go in there and drop their companies in there and create a democracy and make big business, you know, operate for everyone and fill the pockets of the cronies of the administration, which they are doing. But the entire Iraq project, obviously a dangerous, murderous failure. Now, as everybody was paying attention to Katrina the last few weeks, here's what's happened in Iraq. 21 U.S. deaths since Katrina hit. That makes it 1,902 U.S. total since the Iraq invasion. Last week in Baghdad, horrendous week.
Yeah.
There was 160 people killed in one of the deadliest days in Baghdad since major combat ended in May 2003. That is a misnomer. I think we should just stop saying major combat ended. Insurgents launched a wave of attacks that killed 160 people, Riley. That was last Wednesday.
Yeah.
Okay. 31 people were killed last Thursday. On last Friday, 10 people were killed, 21 wounded. A car bomb blew up on Saturday in a market, killing 30 people and wounding 38. I mean, the bodies continue stacking up. Last week, all in all, at least 250 were killed via these attacks of different kinds.
Well, see, you know what you're seeing, Mark? If Katrina and New Orleans is a laboratory, and Iraq is a laboratory, guess who the lab rats are?
Us?
The people. Yeah, exactly. Us.
Exactly. And here's another thing that frightens me on a security level. Dig this. This is new. I got this paranoia about computers. I never wanted to do online banking. I was reluctant to do it from the very beginning. And now they've got this new computer hacking thing that can drain your bank account in a matter of seconds. They got this stuff, this program. They're called key logging programs.
Yeah.
And they are the new threat, and they are exactly what they sound like. They are programs that can install themselves on your computer. And if you opened a fake email or an instant messages or even ads with regular, like, from regular websites,
yep,
that you open, they can record everything you type into your computer or just what you've typed while you're at certain sites, like your bank, okay? That means the password, the account numbers, and those are taken up by whoever's, you know, monitoring it, sent to hackers, or if they're hackers themselves, they've got all your information, and they can get right into your bank and make transfers. Things, all your money can be transferred out of your bank account to another country within seconds. Some people at research, researchers at Berkeley say, if you've got a $10 microphone, you set it up right next to where you're typing there, Riley, on your computer, that from those sounds, if you analyze it properly with some with a computer, obviously, with a little bit of high-tech stuff, you can decipher what every one of those buttons is 90%.
Well, you know, what's happening here is that the banks have made all these innovations because, of course, banks have an interest in not having a whole bunch of tellers that they have to pay health benefits for. So all this stuff is being done electronically online. And what they're finding is, much like with drugs, the dealers, in the case of drugs, and in this case, the thieves and con artists, are one step ahead of the banks, or they're walking in lockstep with the banks. As the banks make an innovation, the thieves make an innovation, and they steal.
And it's guys like you and me who don't know what the hell we're doing on the damn computer that get screwed on this thing.
That's why I go to the bank and say hello to the teller, my friendly teller.
See, I do that still with my bank account here in New York, but the one I had in California, I had no choice.
Oh, so yeah, you got no choice. Yeah.
And now it freaks me out. I had to do adware. I had to go virusware. I had to do everything yesterday just so I felt safe to go on my bank account. And apparently what it really comes down to in my head is, who's going to take responsibility for this? Does the bank take responsibility? Do you just lose your money? And apparently right now there's a case that's before the courts right now trying to decipher that.
Hey, guys.
Yeah.
You know, as you guys were talking about this, I was just doing my bank work online.
Oh, well, that's good. That's good that you're doing that during your board op job.
Yeah, the new studios. Everything is...
So you're that comfortable?
Yes. Yes, I am. And you should know, I just drained all my money out, so there's nothing for them to take.
That's the way to do it. See, that's one of the things in my head.
Just spend it.
Yeah, just spend it or stick it in the mattress or wrap it up in wads and wrap it up in plastic and put it somewhere safe. Bury it.
Well, you know, one of our people here, Wayne Gilman, had a $13,000 identity theft situation.
This stuff scares me. Now, what I was saying about that court case is that they're trying to figure out, the Bank of America has offered a service that says that they'll protect you from that.
Yeah.
And apparently a business that had an account with Bank of America, you know, was pilfered.
Yeah.
They were robbed by one of these keylogging scams, and the money was transferred, like 90 grand was transferred to Latvia, and the bank says that it's not responsible. They want the court to drop the case because they say they're not responsible because this company didn't protect themselves from bad software. And on top of that, they weren't a consumer. Now, the consumer thing is what got me, is they're hedging their bets here. They're going to protect consumers because they're hoping most consumers don't have that much money in their bank accounts. So what does it take to protect someone with 10 grand?
Well, you know what happens? If consumers begin to do what Chris Lopresto just did, which is drain your bank account, suddenly there's a run-up. Where's the bank going to get their money to do all the other stuff they do?
Absolutely. In a couple of minutes, I'm going to tell you how to protect yourself from this particular type of security theft. I want you to think about what you think is the most violent country in the world. I'll give you the answer to that and also some hints about how to protect yourself on your computer. 16 past the hour, Air America Radio's Morning Sedition.
Hello, this is Mick Foley, professional wrestler and best-selling author, and you're listening to the two guys who give the right wing the smackdown. It's Mark Maron and Mark Riley with Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Past the hour. It's Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Hey.
You're listening to Air America Radio's Morning Sedition, and that sound you hear right now is Air America's own Kyle Jason.
Yeah.
He's going to join us in the studio here in just a few minutes to talk about his new CD, Revolution of the Cool. It's pretty groovy, man.
Yeah, man.
Can
nice
I say
stuff.
Groovy, man?
Yeah.
Hey, I was talking before. In just a minute, we're going to tell you what the most violent country in the world is. And I was talking about a little bit about before, giving you some tips on how to protect yourself and your computer from these insane new keylogging programs and these insane new hackers that can seemingly get in under almost, you know, any circumstances, except there are things you can do. You can keep your operating system up to date. On PCs, use the automatic update feature in Microsoft Windows. Windows. Install an internet firewall. You can do that. You can use and update your antivirus software. I do that. Yeah. You can install a program that scans your computer for spyware and run it weekly. Spyware scanners include SpyBot Search and Destroy, AdAware by LavaSoft, Spy Sweeper, those kind of things. I've got AdAware. I do it every day. Never click. I do. Never click on web links embedded in an email. I got to stop doing that. I didn't know you couldn't do that.
Wait a minute. We get stories with web links embedded in emails.
What are you going to do? Instead, type the address into your browser, or maybe cut and paste it, I guess. Consider switching your web browser from Internet Explorer to Firefox, which has fewer critical and an unpatched security holes. Change your passwords regularly. If possible, keep sensitive information off computers connected to the Internet. If your PC has been compromised, volunteers at websites such as www.spywarewarrior.com, www.spywareinfo.com can help you repair your machine. You should consider switching credit cards and bank accounts and ordering a credit freeze from three major credit bureaus, Experian, Equifax, and TransUnion, if you are experiencing a compromised machine. Now, as I promised, if you guessed that the most violent country in the world was Scotland, you were right.
Uh-oh.
What are the odds of that? A UN report has named Scotland the most violent country in the world. England and Wales recorded the second highest numbers. Apparently, violent crime has doubled over the last 20 years in Scotland, and attacks have been fueled by what they're calling a quote, booze and blades, unquote, culture. The booze and blades culture in West Scotland, which has claimed more than 160 lives in the past 5 years. 2,000 Scots are attacked every week. I still can't believe that number.
Now, I assume this has to be the developed world, because, you know, if we start looking at numbers from Iraq, it would seem that would be the most violent country in the world. So it's got to be the developed world, right?
So, yeah, I'm assuming that it's this type of violence. Now, look, thank God we've got we got more on this story. We got it from an interesting new point of view with more on the story. Let's hear from our brand new Morning Sedition foreign correspondent, Angus McFarker, reporting live from Glasgow. Angus, is Scotland the most violent nation on earth?
Of course not, Mark. That is a load of bollocks.
Uh-huh.
You Americans always think the worst about other nations without finding out the facts first. Got all your information about Scotland from watching Braveheart, did ya?
No, but come on. Yeah. Isn't there a violent streak in Scottish nature, Angus?
Bollocks again, Mark. Bollocks. Sure, we Scots like a bit of fun, but only a complete git would call it violent. We're a stout, muscular people, to be sure. Look at Sean Connery.
All right.
Not a bunch of fat, satisfied, saggy bums like you Americans. Oi, mate, watch where you're going. I'm trying to do a radio broadcast here. Idiot wanker!
What's going on? What's the problem? What's the problem, Angus?
My bite. What's I was saying? The Scots are not a violent people. We're just not afraid of a certain masculine physicality. Oi!
What's going on there?
Wanker! You're just not getting all sticking up your pooper.
What is?
I want to hear you, Scotland! I want to hear you, Scotland! I'm going to drink you, bud.
All right. Thank
you. Thank you, mother.
Thank you, Angus, for the report. That was very insightful, Angus.
Mr.
Thank you.
Angus McFarker from Morning Sedition. Bring it on, little man. I want to eat your liver. Come on. Is that all you've got?
Okay. Thank you. We'll be checking back in with Angus in the future to... Maybe we should send him everywhere to cover Europe.
Too much beans. That's got to be it.
Oh, man. That's hilarious. They are pretty... I guess they are pretty tough. You know, that you have to be... I think there is something... Like, everyone goes through that when they're a kid. When you first see the first time you see a guy wearing a kilt, you have that immediate response. Sort of like, that was with the dress. And you realize that most guys that pull that off, you gotta be one tough dude to pull off wearing a kilt.
Well, yeah, especially if you're outside of Scotland and you gotta fight somebody every time they say something about it.
They don't wear anything under there. I don't want to go there necessarily.
Oh, see now.
No, but I heard that's true. I heard that's preferable.
Could be.
I'm not true or preferable?
I saw that in Braveheart.
You did see that in Braveheart? Is that where
yes,
I learned it?
They did not wear anything underneath the kilts.
Yeah, you put me in a weird position there to say it's preferable not to wear things. For me, I just in case you catch a glimpse of some guy's butt.
Uh-oh.
Nah.
Nothing wrong with that.
No, I know. You know, especially in the locker room. Yeah, you're one of those guys, Chris. You're a butt swapper.
Yeah,
yeah. Yeah, and you do it to guys. I never played football, so the first time he did it to me, it's sort of like, what? How come? Why? Okay, I like you too. That's all right. Good for you.
It's a show of encouragement.
Yeah, I know, but it's weird.
Like, way to go.
I mean, I'm 41 years old, and I got a guy your age smacking my butt. I didn't freak out or anything, but I was confused at first. But that's probably my problem, isn't it?
I think so.
All right, thanks for supporting me in that.
Hey, so, Mark, we got an email from a listener in Scotland who says she's never been stabbed, and she just wanted to set the record straight.
There are a few of them left.
She must be one out of nine.
Yeah. Louise says there's nothing wrong with Scotland.
Oh, okay.
All right, so we've been misinformed. Coming up, we've got Kyle Jason's going to talk to us about his new album, so stick around for that. He's a very entertaining gentleman. 27 past the hour, Air America Radio. Morning Sedition.
Morning Sedition with Mark Maron and Mark Riley on Air America Radio.
Thirty-four past the hour. It's Mark Maron here with Mark Riley. It's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition program.
Hey,
hope everyone's having a relatively decent Tuesday. That sound you hear coming through your speaker is the sound of our next guest. You can hear him on Air America Radio every Saturday night from 10 p.m. to midnight. His new CD is called Revolution of the Cool. Morning Sedition is pleased to welcome Air America's own Kyle Jason. Kyle, so that song is called Why Am I So Funky, and you wrote that with Chuck D?
Yes, that is correct. Good morning, everybody out there in Air America Radio land. Yours truly
What's
the
up,
groovy.
Kyle? Ice What's Jason.
That? Yes, sir. Yours truly the groovy gooly, the dapper toe tapper. I'm normally doing my thing late at night, man. You guys are up a little early for me.
Dude, Kyle is like one of the most well-dressed people here, if not the most well-dressed person
Well,
here.
Thank you, sir. Yeah. Thank you. Thank you.
I mean, not particularly today, but I mean in general. he looks very dapper. No, you look good. You look stylish.
Thank you, sir. Thank
so
you.
Now let's talk about your influences primarily, because that sounds that's got a great groove to it, and it sounds pretty classic in terms of it's rooted in an R&B tradition, eh?
Yeah, sure.
So when you were a kid, what was the first music that blew your mind?
James Brown.
Uh-huh.
Me too.
5 years old, my mother took me to see James Brown at the Apollo Theater. It changed my life.
What year was that?
Story.
Was
easy,
that Fat
easy,
Sweaty?
Easy.
No,
that was Throwdown James Brown.
Okay,
that was in the heat of it.
That with the review with the,
of course,
with the famous flames and Bobby Byrne?
Yeah,
no,
sure,
yeah.
The hottest working man in show business.
With the cape and
of course,
you know, going off stage.
Well, he's still doing the cape.
Still doing the cape, man.
He doesn't go down as well when he does the bow, but he's still doing the cape.
Right.
Well, that's an amazing, mind-blowing thing, experience to see that.
Sure.
So primarily James Brown. Then as he grew older, what else?
Stevie Wonder.
Yeah,
you know,
right.
I mean, you know, my mother and my father were both singers. Actually, they met doing my father was a doo-wop singer, so they met at a talent show.
Uh-huh.
So with that in mind,
oh, really?
It's a mushy love story. but anyway, you know, with that, my mother, you know, was very well rounded in music. So I grew up listening to everything from Jimi Hendrix to Cream, you know, to Eric Clapton to Stevie Wonder to Motown to everything. So I have a deep well, if you will.
The full spectrum of
full
spectrum.
All not
that's
the
necessary.
Phil Spector,
yeah.
Not the Phil Spector, but
no,
Phil Spector.
Love Phil Spector too.
I know.
Hendrix was a transforming experience for me. I'm a little older than you, Kyle.
Yeah.
I was about 15 when I first heard Are You Experienced.
Yeah.
And that was just like, whoa, what is
sure.
this? But I got to ask you, because I saw you perform here in New York about a month ago.
Right.
And the thing that struck me was you had an old school large ensemble. What'd you have, 8 pieces or something?
Oh, yeah. And it's getting bigger by the day.
Yeah. Now, a lot of people.
What are you just driving through New York in a bus going, you play sad?
Right.
Get on.
Exactly. Come on, get on the bus. Well, exactly. a lot of people that fronted bands in the 70s and early 80s began shrinking those large ensembles because it cost so much to move them around and that sort of thing. Why use a large ensemble and not use electronics to take the place of some of those players?
The ensemble button.
Yeah.
Because nothing takes the place of a real live band.
I agree with that.
Hands down. I mean, and I'm fortunate enough to have a group of individuals that really, really believe in the project and believe in me. And there's no questions asked. I mean, it's not a dollar thing right now. It's about let's make the best music that we possibly can. Let's go and perform the best we can for the people. And everything else will come. You know, the finance and all that stuff is incidental. That's just a part of it. But you go out there and give the best. And that's what everybody else did in the beginning. And that's I'm trying to keep up with that tradition.
And also, in terms of performing live, it makes all the difference in the world to have a full band up there blasting away. What is the makeup of the band, if I can ask just a professional question? How many horns
Full
horn you got?
Section. I got three horns, sax, bone, and trumpet. Keyboard player who also doubles on sax and flute, drums, guitar, and bass, and possibly some, hot go-go background singers, like the Ikettes.
Oh.
Soon to be coming into the influx.
The Ikettes. Yeah, don't treat them like I treated them.
No, sir.
Yeah.
No, that will not
happen. Don't smack them around,
no,
okay?
No, sir. That will not happen. No.
That's you got one of those guys that plays many instruments in your band, huh?
Yeah, a couple. We actually just brought in a female sax player. I'm a big Rat Pack fans. How we dress and how our whole thing is. So we finally got our Shirley MacLaine. She's young and she's got that vibe. So she is our Shirley MacLaine. Now we're looking for Angie Dickinson.
Wait a minute, that's not the same woman that was in the video.
Well, wait a minute,
That's a different one. She's quite a woman in
this
video.
We got them coming and going. we're swinging. I mean,
you're not treating them like the Rat Pack treated those two guys.
Well, I don't know how did they treat
you. I think they were all pretty passed around.
It's not that type party.
Now, one of the things that struck me when I heard you play was that your ensemble was tight. And for people that don't know what that means in musical terms, it means that every rhythm, every beat, every riff is exactly where it's supposed to be during the course of a song. I can tell tightness, believe me. I've seen a lot of live performances. Is that just repetition? Is that just simply working with the band and working on these things? Because also along with that is the fact that you guys move, you have people that move around and synchronize movements and that sort of thing, which is a James Brown staple as well.
I think it's just as much knowing the kind of people that you have to surround yourself with. And those people have to understand what it is you're doing. They have to understand the music because you can rehearse and rehearse and rehearse. If the cats don't get it, they don't get it. And it will never be as tight as you need it to be. So I think it's a combination of the two, the people and rehearsal.
Well, I'm sad that I missed that performance. When can I see you next?
Well, soon. We're going to plan another big one.
Nights are hard for me.
One. I know. Yeah. I understand. We'll do it maybe a little earlier. Probably in a month, we're going to do another big show.
Because I like the big shows.
Yeah. I slept for six hours to go see this, man. I feel bad.
Look, your kid's out there on the console.
That's right.
He belongs there.
Yeah, that's right.
He's literally on the edge of the
no
desk
babysitter today. My two-year-old is with me hanging out. Look at him.
Oh, he's great.
He's the king of the world.
He is.
Twice the soul I got, I'll tell you that.
Looks like he's running things in there. He's like, everything's under control. We're cool. He's actually asleep, sitting up. That's amazing. So you want to hear, why don't we play a few minutes of this song, After Midnight? Is there a story behind After Midnight?
First single, not necessarily a story. You know what it is, too? I think in the tradition of making a record that has, the subtleties of romance and so on and so forth, I think that's missing today in music, and I think that we got to kind of get back to a little bit of class, treat a lady like a lady,
So with that, let's hear a little bit of After Midnight.
I'll be wasting my time. You
So the song is After Midnight. Our guest is Kyle Jason. That's got a, can I say, great groove? Can I say that?
Sure. Yeah.
I got two words for you.
What? Yeah.
Norman Whitfield.
Of course.
That's what
so
I
you
thought.
Understand the game, sir. Yeah. You understand the game, sir.
Explain the game to the white guy.
All right. This is Norman Whitfield, late 60s, early 70s, right. Temptations. The right. violin riffs over right. the top. Sure. The horn riffs that pop in between.
Right. Four
that's
on
straight
the floor.
Up, yeah, four on the floor.
Think Papa was a Rolling Stone. Sure. Think yep. Yep. that kind of thing.
So that was invented that style with those two things going at the same time?
Yeah, absolutely.
Because I recognize it. I just didn't know the guy's name.
Yeah,
and now
Norman
I do.
Norman Whitfield, amazing producer.
Apparently, your son is out there. Every time you mention someone's name, he just repeats it. Like you said Stevie Wonder, and he went, Stevie Wonder.
Yeah,
James
he knows.
Brown.
He knows. And that's so important. I mean, we're talking about tradition here. You uh-huh. know? And my mother took me, as I said, 5 years old to see James Brown. Recently he came to the Brookhaven Amphitheater. I took my wife, my mother, and my son when he was 9 months old to see James Brown. Keeping with the tradition, you know. You ask a young white child who Mick Jagger is in the yeah. Rolling Stones, they know.
They know.
Black people need to get back to tradition and understanding the great artists
I'll
that came
you,
before.
Here's a sad story, Kyle. You see that man right in there? That's my father. And he took me to see Sonny and Cher when
okay.
I was seven. And,
tradition, my good man.
There you go. They say that.
And I think he took me to see Peter Frampton, too.
Is oh, that there you go.
Frampton
right.
was cool.
Thank God for the weird guy at the record store to you know, teach me what music. Now, that's not true. My father, when I was a kid, used to play that 8-track. He played Buddy Holly Greatest Hits. He
okay.
played American Graffiti. He had a big, deep respect for R&B. He used to play the Stroll. You know the song?
Let's about it? Go Stroll. Yeah. I remember that from when that's, I was a little kid.
Yeah, that used to be his favorite song, so I had that plowed into my head. Mm-hmm. Now, let's, and I thank you for it, Dad. It's one,
that's
of,
right.
what's one of the gifts
tradition,
he gave
my
me.
Good
yeah.
man.
Now let's talk a little bit about your show here on Air America. It's on Sunday nights.
Saturday nights
at 10 p.m. And what do you do with that for people who don't know who are like our audience?
Well, I think it's kind of a diversion. I kind of use my show as a decompression chamber, if
there
you will,
go.
For Air America. I mean, it's a lot of heavy stuff that goes on, and you guys tackle the tough issues and stuff. So I kind of use my show as a decompression chamber. I talk about music, art, and culture. I profile classic albums. We do everything from Miles Kind of Blue to Coltrane Love Supreme to Watt Stax, and we talk about the social ramifications, Marvin Gaye's What's Going On, and how it relates to today and how it related to years gone by, if you yeah. will.
Boy, it sounds like a decompression chamber, but you definitely are taking on the big subjects only
sure.
through music,
sure.
and that's a great thing. And also, you were on the team, the Jim Earls. You were on the softball team.
Yeah, my first time ever playing baseball.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, they put up with me. I never played baseball ever in my life. Ever.
Really?
And Dan Bashman teased me. I came out. What were you going to say?
Yeah,
I heard there's two of you in here now.
What were you going to say?
He was the best looking guy on the field.
Best dressed. there was actually one play. Kyle had brand new baseball pants.
Cleats, the
ball was hit right to him, and he stood there dumbfounded, wanted to run over from 2 miles away and right field to pick up the ball. But
he didn't want to get
Kyle,
dirty.
He looked
no,
great.
I never played, and they put me out in the outfield, and I'm looking at the ball and say, okay, I got this. And as it's getting closer and closer to me, I realize that it's like 8 feet behind me. I'm like, how do you do this?
Yeah.
I can hit, though. I can run. Don't put me to catch anything out there in the outfield.
I love that one. I got it. I had someone else
better. I don't got it.
It ain't gonna happen. Well, congratulations on the album. It comes out today. Is
yes,
that
sir.
True?
In stores today. So anybody driving to work right now and getting this bit of information, go out to your local retailer and get Kyle Jason Revolution of the Cool. And it has a bonus DVD also.
Oh, that's excellent!
Bonus
that's
DVD.
That's smart, man.
Yeah, you
that's
got
smart.
Chuck D on there. You got Hank Shockley. A lot of members of the Bomb
oh,
Squad.
Oh yeah, yeah, the Roosevelt
right,
crew.
Right, Roosevelt crew. Exactly. Yeah. Talking about Roosevelt. Talking about music and all that good stuff.
The DVD edition. Is a smart thing because, you know, with people hijacking and pirating things off the internet,
right.
the one thing they can't get is that DVD.
That's
so,
right. Right.
If you think you're going to get this the Revolution of the Cool just off your little Napster or whatever, no. You don't get the DVD with that. All right, so Kyle Jason, thanks a lot for coming. It's great seeing you.
Thank
man.
You, man.
Thanks,
it's been
Kyle.
My pleasure,
see you soon, man.
You guys are awesome. Thank you very much.
All right, we're going to be back to wrap things up, do some cliff notes, maybe talk to somebody in the studio. Maybe my dad will come in and give us a movie review or
there
two.
There you go.
It's 47 past the hour, Air America Radio's Morning Sedition.
This is Congressman Barney Frank, and you're listening to Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
52 past the hour. Let's land this thing. It's Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Hey.
It's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition program. Before we leave today, I just want to invite you folks to come to Washington and march with us. We'll be broadcasting live from the XM Radio studios in Washington, D.C. this Friday. That's the day before the Green Fest and the big anti-war rally. We'll have Cindy Sheehan right there live in person in the studio. You'll need tickets for this one, so go to morningsedition.com and enter to win a free pair. The contest is open until Wednesday at 9 a.m. Eastern Time. Tonight, if you're in the New York area, you want to go see some stand-up, our own Bruce Cherry, along with comedian Greg Giraldo and a few others, are at a benefit at Stand Up New York tonight to celebrate the UN's International Day of Peace. Stand Up New York is on 78th Street, just off Broadway. For tickets, call 212-595-0850. And you can always email us at sedition@airamericaradio.com. There you go. We're going to have the Cliff Notes in a few minutes, but in the studio with us right now is the man who spawned me. Do you say that? That I came out of my mother because of this guy right here, Dr. Barry Maron, a resident of Albuquerque, New Mexico, who was in town, and I hear you saw a couple movies, Pop. What was the movie we were just talking about?
The Great Raid.
The Great Raid. Now, who's in that? You were trying to figure that out before. You don't know?
He plays the detective on one of the shows that we watch. He stars with Haggerty's daughter.
Well, that's enough. That guy. You know who that guy is, Brendan? You know who he's talking about? Do you have any idea? Oh, my God, Brendan doesn't
Whoa.
Even know. But that's all right. It's not important. So the movie's about what? I didn't see it.
It's about the best, most efficient raid of Americans to salvage prisoners of war of the Japanese. Just an epic picture. Just
uh-huh.
It's just fulfilling, and it's engrossing, and it's engaging. It's everything.
Those will be the blurbs on the poster. Fulfilling, engaging, engrossing. Dr. Barry Maron, Albuquerque, New Mexico.
That's
for the new poster. I think they're going to get on that. So it had everything you wanted, and also dealt with some health issues, which you found interesting. Is that true?
Well, there was tremendous decay of the population from malaria, and that just showed how these guys survived and endured and helped each other and fought the Japanese in spirit. And true presentations, the true stories are just fascinating to me. It's just, you were there. You feel that you're there. Just
right.
Surrounding.
And that's nice because that was probably the fourth movie you saw that day. Am I right?
Almost, probably.
Benjamin Bratt. That's the guy's name, right?
Benjamin Bratt. Yeah.
And that's good.
No, it wasn't Benjamin Bratt.
All right. No, he was in Law and Order.
I think he was. I think it was
the
that
original.
Guy. I think that Brendan's on the website now. But if you want to argue it, that's fine, Dad. You feel free to argue it. So now you do that. You'll actually go to the movies for the day. I don't know that a lot of people do that. Now, let me ask you this, because I remember one time you had a popcorn scam work, and I went to your house, and you actually had the empty extra-large popcorn containers at his house. I said, what are those for? He's like, what, do you think I'm going to pay for it again? I'm going to go to the movies? And here I'm thinking to myself, are you really getting away with something, or do the people at the theater you go to say, oh, here they come again with their containers? Just let them in. There's no reason to ruin their dreams. Do you still do that?
Of course.
Now, do you pay for it, four movies, or do you sneak in?
Do you pay for all four movies, or do you sneak in?
Sneak in.
Yeah?
Nice.
Wow. but this is the thing, though. You know, it's not that, you know, you're in very good shape, but I imagine that the people working at the theater are just watching you two, you and your wife, Rosie, you know, scramble around going, all right, go, now. You know, and they're going, look at, they think they're laughing. You think they're laughing?
It was almost like it's like you're getting away with something. It's like a vicarious thought. One time, though, we sat in a movie that was supposed to start, and we were the only ones there. No one had paid for a ticket. They didn't show the movie.
Really?
Honest.
Did you fight? Did you?
No. We just walked out.
You should have fought for your movie. All right, right now, for those of you who are just tuning in, here are a few highlights of what we talked about on the program. It's time for today's Morning's Edition Cliff Notes. Democrats have a 12-point advantage over Republicans in polling for the 2006 midterm elections. 12 points, that's great. Once Democrats are back in power, we can rest easy knowing the country's being driven to ruin at only half the speed.
Oh, Lord.
New research suggests that psychopaths make the best financial traders. A team of U.S. scientists has found the emotionally impaired are more willing to gamble for high stakes. Hey, why do you think I got into show business?
Oh, Lord.
The revelation that people with brain damage tend to make good financial decisions has left experts struggling to account for the failure of George Bush's economic policy. It's sort of sad, since these people can never lead a full emotional life, and their only comfort is to roll around in a big pile of money and never worry about anything ever again. Wow, how sad is that? A report shows that Scotland is the world's most violent country. How violent is Scotland? Travel agents in Edinburgh are offering special getaway weekends in Baghdad. Folks, how are you? All right, today's phrase just dropping into conversation. So now the military is using enemy body counts as a benchmark for success in Iraq. Wake up, sheeple. The Bush administration has finally found a standard for achievement they can live up to. If success is measured in dead bodies, everything Bush has done from New Orleans to Baghdad has been an absolute triumph. Who do we got tomorrow? Director Norman Jewison.
Yeah, that's going to be a very, very interesting conversation. And Lawton Small, too. Good one, Marin.
You
Air America Radio.